We are still mourning. Welcome. The next case on our calendar this morning is Knutson v. Knutson. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. If I'm not, I'm sure you'll let me know. Counsel, each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument, with appellant's counsel having an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal, if you'd like to use that time. It is at your discretion. Please be mindful of those timing restrictions. They're indicated in the light and clock in your podium. And please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument, because we do keep an audio recording for the public. Counsel for appellant, whenever you are ready to proceed, you have the floor.
Thank you, Your Honors. Michael Boulette here on behalf of appellant Laura Knutson, asking this court to reverse and remand a dismissal of Ms. Knutson's divorce petition. Your Honors, the Knutsons built deep roots in Minnesota, spread here over three decades, including businesses here, homes here, building a life here. But when it came time to dissolve that marriage, Dr. Knutson, respondent, flew 700 miles past the Hennepin County Family Justice Center to petition for divorce in Tulsa, Oklahoma, a state and a city that his family would be leaving in less than a year, in a month's time. When the parties appeared before the Hennepin County District Court, Dr. Knudsen sought to dismiss Ms. Knudsen's divorce petition. Ms. Knudsen sought support from Dr. Knudsen on a temporary basis, as well as discovery. And the district court manufacturing three different legal errors, dismissed Ms. Knudsen's divorce petition. We appeal that dismissal because it commits three critical legal errors. First, it misapplies this court and the Supreme Court's case law on the first-to-file principle. Second, it misapplies the inconvenient forum analysis that was never argued below and that respondents expressly disclaimed before the district court. And third, it misuses and misapplies a mishmash of family law jurisdictional statutes that simply don't apply to this case. Beyond that error, the district court charged Ms. Knudsen $22,000 in conduct-based fees for simply seeking a divorce in the state she called home for the better part of three decades.
Can I jump you to that part of your challenge on appeal?
Absolutely, Judge Ross.
If I read your brief correctly, your lead argument is that the statute 518.14 doesn't provide the district court authority to impose conduct-based fees. Can you tell me when was the first time in the proceeding when that argument has been presented?
You're right, Judge Ross, and we acknowledge in our brief that is an argument presented for the first time on appeal. And so typically this court might consider that argument waived under Thiele. The reason we present it to this court is twofold. One, because of the very early stage of this proceeding, the record is not as developed as we might expect to see had this matter proceeded all the way to trial, or had this been a fully...
How does that affect the forfeiture issue under Thiele? Whether it's fully developed or 20 weeks after trial, after a 20-week trial, if the matter wasn't presented to the district court, considered by the district court, decided by the district court, on what basis would we decide on appeal that that's a meritorious argument justifying reversal of the district court?
On the basis of Jacobson, Your Honor, on the basis of Jacobson, because what we're asking you to do is not to sit and reweigh facts that the district court might have considered, right? One of the central issues in Thiele is you don't want to be sitting as an error-correcting court finding facts or examining a record the district court didn't have the opportunity to develop.
That's part of it. One of the other issues is sort of not sandbagging the district court so that we find error in the district court's decision based upon an argument the district court could have reviewed but never had an opportunity because the parties didn't raise it.
And I do think, Your Honor, it's a fair argument. We acknowledge it in our brief for the sake of candor. The reason we do think it's important here, first, is because under Jacobson, we view it as a refinement. It's not based on new or controverted facts. It wouldn't have changed the factual arguments that would have been developed or found below. I think secondarily, there's also the reality that this issue does continue to reach this court in a series of unpublished decisions. And at a certain point, the bench and bar need guidance.
And I don't want you to spend all of your time on that nuance, because I gather there are more weighty issues you wanted to address today.
There are, Your Honor. And I think if we stick with the attorney's fee issue just for a moment, we'll take my argument slightly out of order. There is absolutely the statutory problem. A 518.14 does not and has not authorized awards of conduct-based attorney's fees, an issue that, you know, Justice Gilday alerted the bar to in her dissent in Anderson, and that's continued to arise before this court in unpublished decisions.
We've had, you know, one of our judges has mentioned it. I don't know how continual it's arisen. And, of course, Justice Gilday was writing a dissenting opinion, not the lead opinion, when she appeared to raise the question.
She was addressing a dissenting opinion, Your Honor, but recall that the majority in Anderson didn't adopt any reasoning under 518.14, didn't say the contrary. We disagree with you, Chief Justice. We think this does authorize conduct. They simply use inherent authority to reach the same outcome. And when I say that it's been reaching this court continually, as far back as Geske, which is kind of your seminal published decision on 518.14, there are footnotes being dropped. We don't know if conduct-based fees are only authorized in addition to need-based fees. And then more recently, we cite in footnote 5, Tiedtke, Plekunsky, Cena, Salikow, all mentioning either this hasn't been preserved under Thiele or we don't feel like we need to reach it in this case. But more importantly, Your Honor, and to your point, there are more meaty issues here. On the subject of attorney's fees.
Well, is it Mr. Boulet?
Boulet, thank you, Judge.
Boulet. You know, not to sort of, I mean, if we think the district court got it wrong on all the other issues, it seems to me the conduct-based fees kind of fall away. Would that be a fair point?
I think that's absolutely right, Judge.
Maybe we should sort of get to the...
And so we'll circle back, because fundamentally these are all legal challenges, right?
Got them.
At the threshold level, what we see is the district court conducting a fairly one-step analysis. Dr. Knudsen filed first in Oklahoma, served second, critically, and I want to highlight that fact, and not only served second, but the record below directly contradicts the district court's findings that he attempted service before Ms. Knudsen both filed and served her Minnesota petition.
Here was my little problem with that argument. I saw it in your reply brief, and I thought, well, that's a zinger of an argument. I was wondering why your opponent didn't address it, and then I saw that it wasn't raised in your opening brief. In fact, your opening brief seems to... It even uses the word after, the way the district court did. It seems as if you were adopting, not to put the burden on you, but it seems as if that argument that there was clear error in the district court's timing of the filing in Oklahoma and the avoiding service and then the filing in Minnesota, it seems like that was an argument raised in the reply brief only. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I would disagree, and I disagree for a couple reasons. First,
you're going to have to send me to a page if you're disagreeing.
I may have to send you to a page. Hear my answer, and then we'll surf through pages.
Fair enough.
First, on the attorney's fee issue, what it fundamentally hinges on is that second prong of attorney's fees, that there was not a factually supportable basis for attorney's fees. If the notion is that Ms. Knudsen did something wrong by seeking relief in her home state, and she did this terrible thing by avoiding service for all those months, the record itself belies that factual finding under 518.14.
Just to be clear, you keep referring to it as her home state. Do we have to agree with that characterization to reverse?
You don't. You don't need to agree with me on that point. But more importantly, the order of filing and service, while we find it compelling as a matter that's just established in the record, doesn't make a difference with respect to any of the three reasons that the district court wrongfully dismissed. It doesn't make a difference under the first-to-file rule, which is really a principle, because the first-to-file rule doesn't even begin to apply to states that don't, to jurisdictions or courts that don't share concurrent jurisdiction.
Mr. Boulet, can I ask you, it kind of skips ahead to what your next point was, even if it did, that's how you argued it in the brief, beyond the concurrent jurisdiction issue, is your main, would it be a fair summary of your main argument for legal error that it was inflexibly applied?
I think that it was first wrongfully applied, and then even if it could be applied to concurrent jurisdiction, it was inflexibly applied.
So would it be fair to say, and I know you're in your conclusion, your recommendation of everything is reversal, I assume necessarily if it's inflexibly denied, would that not require remand for the court to further develop that principle as opposed to a rule?
It depending on how you reverse, Judge Leader, if you reversed and said the first-to-file principle cannot be applied to a foreign jurisdiction, to parallel litigation in a foreign state, then there would be no flexible standard to apply, right? Because the first-to-file rule simply wouldn't apply to a parallel action in Oklahoma. If you disagreed with me on that threshold point, well, no, there's case law saying it can't apply to other states, but this is an exception for some reason, then there would still be a requirement for remand to apply the flexible criteria that you mentioned. Exactly right. And I think on both counts, the second prong of first to file and inconvenient form, there's just more work for the district court to do here before it can dismiss out an action. So again, what this court has said in both St. Paul Surplus and Medtronic, the two cases that appear throughout our brief, is this notion that parallel litigation in another state court doesn't trigger the first to file rule. Said that repeatedly in both those cases. But even if it did, that principle looks to questions about where can we conclude this litigation most holistically, considerations that don't look completely dissimilar from the inconvenient form analysis that we see in Bergquist and subsequent cases. And here, had the court looked to those factors, they all push in favor of proceeding in Minnesota. The party's businesses, multiple businesses, are in Minnesota. Their home is in Minnesota, the place that everybody will be living, candidly by today, but if we just look at the district court record, by this spring is Minnesota.
And is the point, if we agree we're outside concurrent jurisdiction, even with the convenience form, the inconvenience form analysis, the court has discretion to still deny an anti-suit injunction, I assume, and refuse out of comedy and leave it to the parties. You've decided to file in two states. Isn't that the distinction when you're talking about concurrent jurisdiction where you kind of have to directly address it versus principles of comity in a scenario like this?
I think so, Judge Leader, but let me refine my answer to make sure we're talking about the same thing. If the first-to-file rule does not apply, because Oklahoma and Minnesota do not share concurrent jurisdiction, and there really should be no question they don't. They are independent sovereigns here. Then the district court's entire analysis is out the window. And instead, what the district court needed to turn to is precisely what we argued before it in November, which is there is no basis to dismiss this petition simply because respondent filed but did not serve first. There's no basis for dismissal on that ground. Really, what respondent was arguing, we said to the district court, is that Minnesota is an inconvenient forum, right? That's the thrust of the argument that's being advanced before you, Judge. And respondent said, no, we are absolutely not advancing an inconvenient forum.
Let me pause you there. So, I mean, there's the inconvenient forum doctrine where the result is a dismissal if it's a forum nonconvenient. But let's assume hypothetically that there's a basis in Minnesota law for the filing of the divorce petition in Minnesota. Let's assume that under Oklahoma law, there also is a basis for filing there. And the district court then is left maybe not to dismiss. Let's assume we agree that the district court shouldn't have dismissed, but the case is going to proceed either in Oklahoma or Minnesota, probably not both. I suppose the district court could say, well, we're going to deal with the property here. We'll deal with any child support issues in Oklahoma. How would the district court reach that conclusion? What is the mechanism, if it's not dismissal? What is available to the district court to try to resolve, not whether there's inconvenient forum, but which forum is best?
It's an excellent question, Judge Ross, and St. Paul Surplus answers it, a stay. And that's what respondents never sought. It's a stay of proceedings. And the reason a stay of proceedings is so very different than what we got is, A stay of proceedings doesn't typically come with a $22,000 legal bill attached to it. B, a stay of proceedings allows Ms. Knudsen to maintain all of the protections that Minnesota imposes when a divorce is pending. Keep in place insurance policies, don't change any beneficiary designations, don't alienate or transfer or encumber any assets.
So if we agreed with your argument in principle, but saw that this would be the resolution the district court would opt for, are you conceding that we could reverse and remand with instructions for the district court to stay the proceedings?
I don't think you would remand with instructions, Judge Ross, because that would be a determination for the district court to make. It would also allow Ms. Knudsen to revive her request based on subsequent developments. Now, there's a request with 28 seconds, I won't get into it, to supplement the record. There have been a lot of developments in this case, many of which...
Oh, and let me rephrase my question then. Would you then concede that it would be appropriate to remand to the district court to consider whether a stay is the solution to the which is more convenient, which is in the best interest of the children and the family, et cetera?
Right. I certainly think that if this court remanded, the district court on remand would have authority to entertain an appropriate motion for a stay upon briefing from the parties. I can't deny that. That's what St. Paul Surplus creates as the appropriate remedy here.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
Counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. Sam Carusi appearing on behalf of the respondent, Peter Knudsen. May it please the court, counsel. The central question in more than a year of litigation has been, where do we finally try this case, Minnesota or Oklahoma? This is the fourth court to address a related question to that central question.
Not really. I mean, that doesn't seem to be the question the district court answered. The district court didn't answer the question, where should it be tried? The district court answered the question, whether Minnesota has jurisdiction to consider the case at all. So am I correct that that was what the district court decided? It seems to be the plain language of the district court's decision.
Your Honor, you are correct that the court decided it did not have jurisdiction over child-related issues, namely over custody at the time that there was a minor child, and over child support, which jurisdiction for which existed in Oklahoma until the child graduated high school in May of this year. The court also exercised its discretion properly by declining to exercise jurisdiction because in order to discourage forum shopping, which the court found that Ms. Knudsen engaged in.
Well, let's talk about that.
Yes.
I'll just put my cards on the table. I was a bit troubled. If Minnesota law, 518, gives a party the authority, the right, to file suit for divorce in Minnesota. And in this case, suit was filed in Minnesota before service anywhere else. What do you find to be the most compelling case that would say that the district court appropriately found that this was improper forum shopping before we even get to the question of whether it merits a $20,000 penalty? What is the case that supports that proposition?
Well, Your Honor, the the Amatuzio case supports the proposition that a court has wide discretion to consider in issues of public policy, efficiency, expedience, and justice to the parties. In finding that Ms. Knudsen engaged in forum shopping, the district court correctly found that her behavior inappropriately denied her the moral right to bring the action here, even if Minnesota would have jurisdiction. We don't deny that Minnesota has jurisdiction over the divorce. We don't deny that Minnesota has jurisdiction over property division. We believe the lower court correctly exercised its discretion in declining to exercise jurisdiction.
I thought the district court declared it didn't have jurisdiction on a number of grounds, one of those grounds being unjustifiable conduct under 518D 208, which was unjustifiable conduct in the form of forum shopping. So I go back to my question. Under what legal authority does the district court reach that conclusion, that forum shopping, let me pause for a moment. The case, I believe you may cite it in your brief. I know the district court relied upon it. The Reed versus University of North Dakota case?
Yes.
Were you able to find a case that was more clear about the impropriety of forum shopping in Minnesota?
Your Honor,
or is that the best case you were?
It would be. I think Reed is a good example of a case.
Okay,
I mean,
well,
I
let's
think
look at Reed. First, we note the disrespect inherent in applying Minnesota law to enable an action to be brought against a sovereign entitled to immunity under its own law. In addition, Reed's decision to commence and voluntarily dismiss an action in federal court and bring similar actions in Minnesota and North Dakota state courts at the very least gives the appearance of forum shopping. So there's a case where you've got a plaintiff filing a suit in federal court, filing a suit in state court, filing a suit in another state court, and the court says that gives the appearance of forum shopping. It doesn't say that it's inappropriate and worthy of sanctions, but that was the appearance of forum shopping. Here you have a party to a marriage filing for divorce under a statute that authorizes the filing for divorce. So explain how you think Reed supports the district court's conclusion that improper forum shopping was occurring in this case.
Because the same disrespect shown in Reed is shown here for the courts of Oklahoma. So a lot has been made by Ms. Knutson about...
Oh, okay, so you believe that the courts of Minnesota have the authority to sanction a party for disrespecting the court of Oklahoma.
I believe the courts of...
And what is your best case for that proposition?
I believe the... To be fair, Your Honor, there is not a case exactly on point here, and I think one reason is that the court has such broad discretion.
A case that comes and anywhere within the universe of holding in Minnesota that you have engaged in forum shopping by filing suit in Minnesota under a Minnesota statute before you were served a lawsuit anywhere else.
So, Your Honor, it's an issue of commencement of the action, not filing.
Okay. Give me the best case for that.
The action is commenced in Oklahoma when it's filed. On July 14th of last year,
okay,
Dr. Knutson commenced action in Oklahoma.
Got it. So, therefore, the case that nails it for you is?
There is not a case I'm aware of in Minnesota that's addressed the issue directly, Your Honor.
I was concerned you might say that. Here's another concern I've got with the unjustifiable conduct of forum shopping. It was based upon 518D208, which is the UCCJEA statute.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Which applies when you have a custody dispute, which we don't. So on what basis does the district court rely upon the UCCJEA to say that there was unjustifiable conduct justifying the court in not exercising jurisdiction?
So that falls under the court's ability to balance measures or to balance convenience against public policy, efficiency, expedience, and justice to the parties.
The district court relied upon a statute that applies to cases that involve custody disputes, which we don't have.
Well, at the time the case was commenced in Oklahoma, and at the time the case was commenced in Minnesota, the UCCJEA squarely applied to determine the home state of the child was Oklahoma.
For those couple of months, he was going to be I share Judge Ross's thoughtful concerns. I mean, You really think there was going to be a fight about custody in this case?
Your Honor, whether there's a fight about...
turning 18, was he suddenly going to decide, well, by God, I'm going to graduate in Minnesota now? Because I really don't want to play tennis. I'm going to switch, and it's going to be lacrosse.
No, Your Honor, but Minnesota lacked jurisdiction.
No, I get it. At the time it was filed, by God, the statute applied.
Yes.
But, as I try to always tell the clerks, there's appellate land, and then there's actually the world we live in. And I'm hard-pressed to understand the district court's, you know, diatribe about forum shopping when one could, you know, make an argument that, you know, that's what your client was doing. And at the end of the day, you know, I get it. You had a home in Oklahoma. Your client had a home in Oklahoma. They've been, I mean, I don't know. The kid's been going to school in Oklahoma. So by God, you know, there's certainly some Oklahoma ties. But I guess echoing Judge Ross's concerns, I mean, seriously, we're going to go after the appellant because she filed for a divorce under the statute which permitted it in the same state she got married in? I mean, wow, that's just unconscionable.
Well, Your Honor, it was, and to that point, the, as I said, this trial court could have gone either way. She could have determined that she believed Ms. Knudsen's affidavits. She could have determined that she believed Dr. Knudsen's affidavits. She made credibility determinations based on the affidavits and made specific factual findings that Ms. Knudsen engaged in forum shopping. And that's what Ms. Knudsen is asking the court to.
The district court described the forum shopping in a way that would indicate, well, first of all, the district court, even though it was only in the reply brief, you would agree that the district court was wrong, I assume, when the district court said it was that she filed suit in Minnesota after attempted service in Oklahoma. That's false, right?
Yes, that's not correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And that's a problem, isn't it? The district court seemed to be really concerned about that fact that isn't an actual fact.
It's not a problem because under Oklahoma law, as we briefed below, and has been uncontested, a lawsuit is commenced when you file an action, whereas in Minnesota it's commenced when you serve it.
Well, let's talk about the first to file then. The district court relied upon a number of cases, three of which were family law cases, and the other ones weren't family law cases at all. And the ones that were family law cases, in re the marriage of Schmidt, matter of CAD, and Rader versus Rader, those were the three. And one's Minnesota, one's Oklahoma, I think the other is federal court. No, two are Oklahoma. And I think the district court did tend to apply a strict application of first to file, not like it was a lot of discretion. And those cases support that may be something that the district court could do, except those were all UCCJEA cases. And in those cases, the court discussed the statute and how the statute includes this first to file component. Outside of that, outside of the statute, you don't have strict first to file requirements. That's the court you're going to go to, and you're going to dismiss an action somewhere else. And it makes perfect sense, right? The idea is toxic to have parents fighting in one state and another state over custody of a child. It's bad enough when they're in one state. So would you agree with me that that's why the UCJEA applies a strict application of first to file, but the other case law doesn't?
Yes, Your Honor, and we are not arguing that a strict application of first to file is appropriate. We are arguing that the court's application of first to file under principles of comity is appropriate, and the court did not abuse its discretion when it employed that principle. The court employed the principle to determine that Oklahoma was more appropriate than Minnesota.
By the way, I don't see that any now. It looks in the analysis that it was sort of a first to file, you lose, you're out, as opposed to a, you know, that's, you know, it's one of the factors. Let's look at the full set of circumstances. I didn't see that in the analysis.
Well, I believe the district court did a full analysis, Your Honor. Perhaps the wording of the specific paragraphs that address first to file only addressed first to file. But the court made a host of factual findings throughout its opinion and throughout its order, none of which arise to an abuse of discretion. There were facts in the record present to indicate that
if the district court was determining that it lacked jurisdiction, that's not a discretionary question. That's a legal question, isn't it?
Correct, Your Honor. But to the extent the court declined to exercise jurisdiction under principles of comity and under policy reasons, under forum nonconvenience.
Well, forum nonconvenience would be dismissing the action. I think, yep. And that's where I was getting at earlier when I was discussing with Mr. Boulet the possibility of maybe what the district court was doing here is to say, you know, we got two states where arguably you can have a dissolution proceeding going on, and I think Oklahoma's better. And usually what we would see in that case would be not a dismissal, but we're gonna stay the proceedings and let Oklahoma run with it. That's usually what happens, isn't it? And if so, why wouldn't that be the appropriate resolution in this case?
Generally, it's probably more common, Your Honor, but it's not impermissible to dismiss.
Well, unless the district court lacked legal authority to make a jurisdictional decision that it made, that had no jurisdiction.
The court,
what would you think about that on remand? If we said, you know, we think this is what you're doing, district court, you should consider stay on remand. Is that something you would agree to?
I think what the court's describing is a little more akin to Amatuzio, where the lower court had indicated, I don't have jurisdiction, I don't have subject matter jurisdiction, and this court said, well, you do, but you can dismiss on forum nonconvenience. And that was and if the court is declined to make that determination, I believe that's an appropriate remedy. However, the court, I'm sorry, I see my time is up.
You can go ahead and finish answering the question.
But the court properly exercised discretion in declining to assert jurisdiction over this case.
So you would agree, your position is, to the extent that district court declined to exercise jurisdiction that it had,
yes,
it was acting within its discretion, but you would agree if the district court said, if we interpret the district court's decision in some regards as saying, I don't have jurisdiction, that would be legal error.
As to the issues not related to the children, yes, Your Honor.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the panel? Counsel for appellant, you have rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Again, Michael Boulet here on behalf of appellant Laura Knudsen. What respondent is attempting to frame as a discretionary decision is a question of law. What legal standard does the court apply in dismissing a dispute? And candidly, I think I share some of the panel's confusion over precisely what grounds the district court dismissed this out on. There are kind of a hodgepodge of uniform acts that get used. There's a strong sense of the first filed principle. And then there's at least some allusion to inconvenient forum principles. But all three get misapplied. Because the first to file principle is not a question of who wins the race and gets their divorce petition to the courthouse first. It's a comprehensive examination of which state can create the most comprehensive solution. When concurrent jurisdiction exists, first filed principle's out the door, or at the very least misapplied. Inconvenient forum?
So we're clear, you're agreeing that there's jurisdiction in both states, but that doesn't constitute what's known as concurrent jurisdiction. That there's jurisdiction for the action in Oklahoma, there's jurisdiction for the action in Minnesota. Either state could say, we're going to stay our proceedings and do the whole thing in the other state.
What would probably be most appropriate is I acknowledge that Oklahoma and Minnesota both have viable claims for jurisdiction. Ms. Knudsen disputes the propriety of dissolution in Oklahoma on subject matter grounds, but let's assume for a second that Oklahoma's jurisdiction is in fact proper. What we have is parallel proceedings, not concurrent proceedings. And so when you look at St. Paul surplus, when you look at examples of case law that apply this concurrent jurisdiction principle, they're counties within Minnesota, right? They're St. Louis County and Hennepin County. They're Hennepin County and Ramsey County. Or it's a place where jurisdictional boundaries overlap, right? When a car accident occurs in the middle of the river between Wisconsin and Minnesota. It's places where both cases have concurrent authority. What we have here is parallel jurisdiction, right? The same kind of parallel jurisdiction you had in St. Paul Surplus, the same kind of parallel jurisdiction you see in the Medtronic case. There you have two different sovereigns, each of whom believes they have jurisdiction, whether or not they're right. And in those cases, first to file is not applied. It's simply not applicable. And even if it was, you engage in the same way you would between two counties, you engage in a question, who can do the best job here? Who can actually provide the most consistent outcome for the parties?
Mr. Bullitt, wouldn't that suggest then that we're arguing perhaps over a bit of legal minutiae in the sense that even forum nonconvenience really kind of addresses some of those same issues? In other words, comprehensive might include what's most convenient, because that's where the witnesses are, that sort of thing, but under an abuse of discretion, as long as the court...
Right. They do matter, they do intertwine, right? The proper application of first to file and the proper application of forum inconvenience begin to look pretty similar, except inconvenient forum can apply to instances of parallel litigation, whereas first to file can't. But most importantly, first, the district court doesn't really do a whole lot with inconvenient forum, and understandably so, since both parties told the district court, you are not an inconvenient forum. Certainly, we stood up and said, you are the most convenient forum. You're the court with jurisdiction over both businesses and the business partners and all the information we need to determine Dr. Knudsen's income and business value. Respondents made the case, we're not arguing you're an inconvenient forum. You're at least equally convenient. There's no reason that you're inconvenient. So the district court didn't do the weighing of public and private factors that you would need for a dismissal on inconvenient forum basis. And the reason that matters is because now we have a misapplication of the legal standard. We don't have the facts that respondent tries to point you to say we've properly applied the inconvenient forum doctrine, because nobody's considered the public and private factors. I think the importance, Judge Ross, of your point, that the appropriate remedy here was very different, is that it allows Ms. Knudsen to come back to Minnesota when there are developments in Oklahoma, like an inability to get discovery from Minnesota entities resisting Oklahoma subpoenas, like contempt of court, like Ms. Knudsen's relocation back to Minnesota, because nobody's in Tulsa anymore, that would allow her to say to the district court, I understand why you stayed this proceeding in the first instance, but there have been the developments of fact over time that I'd like you to reconsider.
The litigation is still going on in Oklahoma. I gather that the Oklahoma court didn't sanction your client for avoiding service in Oklahoma.
I don't believe it's in the record, but I'm aware of absolutely no sanctions against Ms. Knudsen for what have been called avoided service attempts. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Your time has expired. The matter is submitted. We've received your briefs and your oral argument. Thank you both for your argument today. Interesting case. It's submitted. We'll issue the opinion within the statutory period.
Thank you.
Thank you both. And by the way, nothing prohibits in our rules the parties from getting together and thinking, you know, why, let's not wait until the Court of Appeals decide this. Let's try to find a solution that we're all agreeable to.
Believe us, nothing about this has been paused while we participate here. Thank you so much.
Oh, I meant pause in the form of maybe resolve some things before we decide them, but that's up to you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon. That is the last matter on our oral calendar for today, so the court is in recess.